Joining the program now is Lon Winston. Hi, well, Lon.
Well, hi, Luke.
What's your official title? Retired.
You know, as I said to Will Grandbois yesterday, you know, that there is no such thing of retiring from the theater. You just change what you do. And I'm in a lovely position of being able to just stay focused on the art, which I love. And I said that it's the first time in 22 years since I founded Thunder River, directing The Tempest, that I'm directing and designing the play. I'm not doing the poster, doing the program, doing the press releases, making sure ticket sales, press releases, cleaning the building, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just doing the art. And I love it.
Is that going to elevate things for you?
Well,
you think?
You know, I think what it does is it takes a lot of the stress away. And I've noticed on this show each day I go home, I wake up in the morning. I'm not running down to the theater to take care of things. I'm reading the script. I'm studying it. I'm thinking about the actors and things that I need to share with them. It just opens up a different channel.
This is the third time you've directed Shakespeare for Thunder River Theater?
Yes, this is the third Shakespeare production. We did Macbeth, we did Hamlet 2 years ago, and now I'm doing The Tempest.
Why The Tempest?
Well, you know, interesting. It's rooted in mythos, it's mystical, it's magical. It deals with human nature and human condition in a really interesting way. The play thematically is about reconciliation, forgiveness, all those sweet things. But in Prospero, the lead character, there is this need to vent. There's a need to make people pay first before he forgives them. That's interesting to me, not only from a national picture, but, you know, when you people are quick to say, oh, forgiveness, peace, love, Woodstock, streets to the people. But there's this niggling thing inside people that when they're hurt, when they've been made to suffer, there is a retribution that just is deep-seated in people. That interests me. Mm-hmm. And it's in the play.
It is in the play, isn't it? Big time.
Yeah. So I'm looking at that. I'm working on that. I'm bringing it out through magic and mysticism. And it's exciting. It's exciting to work on. And it was Shakespeare's swan song. I mean, you know, really was the last play that's attributed to the person we call Shakespeare. Whether or not he wrote the play or who wrote the plays, it's the last one that's attributed to that.
And I know down the centuries, some critics have said that Prospero is Shakespeare.
You know, there are many, many articles in critical review that people have discussed that's part of it. One of the things that interests me in the play is that that very well may be true. Albeit I'm an Oxfordian, I believe that there are other people who contributed greatly to the writing of the plays. But that's certainly part of it.
Well, being Shakespeare's final play, is there a sense, how can I put this? Obviously, his plays have dealt with themes, universal human themes, all of it, Macbeth, Hamlet, the histories, all of it. Is there a sense in The Tempest that he came to any conclusions about what a wondrous work mankind is?
You know, it's I think that anytime you delve into a play, especially plays that are old on the chronological line of plays, that you've got to come at a play from a personal point of view. Sam Shepard, a playwright, actor, director, said, "If it's not personal, why do it in art?" And that's interesting to me too. In reading the play, there are things that are that jump out at me. One of the things that I've believed in studying this play for many, many, many years are the characters of Prospero, but also Ariel and Caliban, the two that inhabit the island with Prospero and, of course, his daughter Miranda. But I've always thought of Prospero, Ariel, and Caliban as a tripartite person, that Ariel, as the heir, the sprite, is part of Prospero, and that Caliban, the carnal, threatening Miranda, that's part of Prospero. Those are other sides of him that in the magic he's able to separate from himself and then look at it and examine it from outside looking in instead of from the inside looking out.
He employs those spirits in the story.
Yeah. Yeah,
they are his assistants.
They are his assistants, which throughout, rooted in the text, are lines that let you believe that these are really parts of him that he is questioning, that he is looking at, that he's examining, and that's intellectually and creatively inspires me as I work on the play.
John Gielgud said that Prospero was his favorite role.
Well,
why would he say that?
Well, because I think it's so complex in all the... I mean, and you end up at the end of the play being able to forgive. The other characters in Shakespeare's plays don't always have that opportunity. And so there is the magical aspect of it. You know, I've seen over the years films of The Tempest. And, you know, in film you can do magic in incredible ways, you know, playing with the film. In the theater, you've got to create a whole different kind of theatricality to be with people sitting right there 5 feet away from you. It's not sleight of hand magic. It's a special milieu that you create inside the theater that you hope everybody can just let themselves go into. And so playing Prospero, especially live, and Gielgud is talking about playing that character live, and people are right there viscerally feeling all that he's doing, and that is special.
Well, he starts off as a not entirely sympathetic character, so there's a character development arc in the play, because at the end he does forgive his enemies and he renounces his magic too.
Well, he does. He puts it down finally because he knows he's going home, but he also manipulates and controls this wreck of the ship to bring everybody together where he can really find the way to make each person pay the price for having put him in this predicament for the past 12 years. Even Gonzalo, who saved Prospero and Miranda's life by making sure that when they set them on their little boat, just pushed them out to sea, to die with everybody, his brother Antonio and the king, although we've changed it to a queen, I've cast it as a woman. those characters really thought that Prospero and Miranda were going to be gone and they'd never have to deal with that, especially at that time when retribution of family members. I mean, you took out somebody that the next born was going to make sure you paid the price. You know, that was just all part of what they did. So Gonzalo, who helped them, gave them food and books and clothing and made sure Prospero had everything that he needed on that boat, that if luck would have it, he would be able to use. Gonzalo's on this ship now. And Gonzalo has to go through the same kind of pain and suffering as everybody else until the very end, when he realizes that there's Prospero's there to thank him and love him up, you know? So.
I'm interested in that relationship between Caliban and Ariel and Prospero.
Well, it's
symbolically and realistically in the play too. It's a very complex relationship.
And that's why over the years, even when I was still teaching at the university and teaching the plays and talking about them on these different levels, that the idea of it being a tripartite character always interested me. And there are things in the play, there are lines rooted in the text that support that. It's not just, you know, imagining it, but it's metaphor for me. And actors can't act metaphor. You've got to create. Still, Ariel and Caliban and Prospero are very different characters on stage. But there are moments where you realize that Prospero suffers from this complexity, and that he deals with these things. I mean, let's just take Caliban, who is child of a witch, Sycorax,
and the devil,
exactly. And you know, he's been after threatening Miranda from the time she was a little girl, and that is very disturbing to not only Prospero but to Miranda herself, who gains strength to actually address that in the play. But when you're the father and the 15-year-old daughter, who's a woman now at that period of time, they're the only ones on the island in terms of the human species. And so there's that aloneness, that dark side of the human being, the needs that people have. And that's a dangerous piece of territory, and we've talked about that at great length in rehearsal, how Prospero, his overzealousness and wanting to take Caliban down is that piece of human nature that might very well be part of Prospero's dark side. It's like the devil and the angel on each shoulder whispering in your ear. To Jiminy Cricket. So it's got a lot of history in there and a lot of complexity in the language and the ideas, and I think it's helped us to bring a theatrical life to the play that is exciting. I don't like just doing Shakespeare. I like doing with Shakespeare.
Oh, interesting. Doing with.
Yeah, I like deconstructing the play, which I've done on this. I did it on Hamlet. I did it on Macbeth. I take the play apart. I put it back together in a way that tells the story through our actors, the way we develop the characters. And there's some surprises in our production, which the audience is going to see right off the bat if they're familiar with the play. Even if they're not familiar with the play, but they've heard the story, there are elements for me as a director and designer that I like to open up a different door so that people experience the play in a new and fresh way, that it is a new for today's audience, and that they get something maybe more out of the play than they've, you know, people have thought about it for the last 500 years. So that's very interesting to me in that exploration. I don't like historical accuracy. For me as an artist, Luke, I'm not interested in, taking a Shakespeare play and just for the hell of it, sticking it in 1812 or the Civil War or, you know, and War of Independence. They all stand up because they're universal. I like anachronism. I like bringing in images of today into the play so that the audience just doesn't look at a historical play and think that it's all about those people, but rather all this human nature and development in the human condition is really about us as we watch it and we become part of it, not just sort of observers on the side.
So let's talk about the cast. Who is playing Prospero?
Well, Prospero is Jeff Carlson.
Jeff
has been with me for a long time. He played the lead in Lillian Hellman's Little Foxes before we ever had the theater. He was Macbeth in Macbeth. He was in The Cherry Orchard. He played George in Virginia Woolf. He's been with me for a while, and he's done some major roles. And you know, it's that when I did Hamlet, I said to everybody, "You don't do Hamlet if you don't have a Hamlet." David Pulliam played Hamlet; he was a company member. For me, David is Hamlet, so that's why I chose to do Hamlet. Well, the same thing. I called Jeff and a year and a half ago, and I said, "I'm thinking of doing The Tempest next year, Prospero." And I mean, there was no hesitation. Mm. Yeah.
That familiarity you have with him and he with you, does that pay dividends in the play? I'll bet it does.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we trust each other implicitly. We've worked on some pretty difficult pieces of literature, and to have that kind of bond between an actor and a director, you know, you read about it all the time. There are actors who have done films with Scorsese or any filmmaker, and they want to do another one. People that have been in a Woody Allen play, they want to do another one with Woody Allen because there's a bond that gets established, and Jeff and I have that bond. And I know that when I share ideas with him, that he goes home, he researches it, he thinks about it, he puts it together. I mean, he wrote a spectacular backstory about Prospero and where he came from. And and that's part of an actor's responsibility. That's not mine. I'm dealing with the play from the page one to page 100. You know, so they need to know, well, who am I before this play even starts? And often, who am I after the play is over? My pre-life and my post-life, and Jeff is thorough that way. Trary Madelone, who's she's been around for a long time. Maurice LeMay, her husband, who was head of Aspen Writers and ran the Creed Repertory Theater for years. You know, they were in the very first Thunder River Theater Company production when I founded it 22 years ago. And to have Trary, who plays Ariel, be with me on opening night and the dedication of the renaming of the theater. And she was in the very first play, and she's going to be there on stage. That's really neat. And I played opposite her 2 years ago in Lion in Winter, which was fun to do. So, again, there's a trust, you know, from years of work and professional understanding of the art and the craft. Nathan Cox plays Caliban. Nathan is really a kind of musical theater background, and I cast him in Rashomon. He played Taj Maru, the bandit. And it was a step outside that musical theater for him. Well, he loved it. And then he was in Jekyll and Hyde, and now he's in this. And we have also established that kind of actor-director bond. Owen O'Farrell is playing Trinculo, and Gerald DeLisser, is playing Stefano. These people, Nick Gray is playing Ferdinand. These people have been working with me for years.
Huh. Is there a generally understood implicit challenge in doing Shakespeare?
You know,
to an actor or to a director?
Yes. Yeah, I think there is. First of all, it's doing a play in a foreign language. So, you know, it's really difficult for people sometimes to wrap their mind around the language. They sit in the theater and they hear it, and it's in a different language. And you pick up a word or, you know, it's like studying, if you were studying Spanish and somebody, you know, said to you, in Spanish, I'm going to pour milk on your head. And you heard the word leche, you know, and you smile because you got that word, you know, and you go, yeah, yeah, and they pour milk on your head. So it's, you know, it's difficult for people to sit and watch Shakespeare. I think that people do it because it's taken on a mythos in Western civilization. Culturally, we go to Cedar City and Oregon Shakespeare Festival and Chicago Shakespeare, and we want to see great actors play these roles, and it's work. It's not like, you know, just sitting through a Tennessee Williams or an Arthur Miller. You got to work at it.
So there's an understanding among the actors that they're standing there orating in blank verse, but they have to connect with a modern audience. So that's the challenge.
It's a huge challenge, yes. And in a way, and I said this to Will yesterday in an interview for the Sopra's Son, that I see it as part of my responsibility to create a theatrical milieu that allows the audience to get what's going on, even if they don't get every line, because I create iconic images on stage and do all these things that they get it. They see the play begin, the play ends, you see the tension and the diversity in emotions that are riveting the characters together, and if they're honest and it's authentic and they're engaged, then the audience is experiencing the play more than just intellectually. They're feeling it. They're seeing things that they recognize in their own life. They see the behaviors. They go, ooh, I've seen that person. And so there's an identity, there's a frame of reference that you can attach yourself to. And that's, for me, that's part of my job as a director. And that's why I say, and it doesn't matter if it's just Shakespeare, really it's every play I direct that I do with the play, not just do the play. Because I want to wrap the play around my audience.
So you're employing all the tools available to you as a director to create that milieu, lighting, blocking, costumes, directing the players.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lighting designer and a costume designer, but I have to be really articulate on what the vision is for them to be honest collaborators, which I think is part of my reputation as a director, is that I'm really an actor's director. I'm an actor. So I really welcome all their contributions and teach me something about Prospero. I mean, I read it. I get it. I studied it. But you're playing him now. Teach me something about him. And I say that to all the characters. Teach me about your character. Then I can come. The more you give me, the more I can give back to you in terms of the vision of the whole play.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thank you.
You're truly at play, and you're doing it with others. You're experimenting. You're bringing in new ideas. You're trying things.
Well, it's the art, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's I'm a social artist, and that's, I mean, not a playwright. It's too lonely for me. I can't sit in my room alone and write plays. I let other people write plays. But I'll take those words with a group of actors and designers and shape a theatrical event around that. And fortunately for me, and I haven't been, I mean, I'm 70 years old. I haven't all my life. I mean, I have phases of my artistic career. Fortunately, I've only done theater all my adult life. That's... I'm lucky that way.
Does that mean you could not have directed The Tempest as a 40-year-old?
No, on the contrary. It would have been a 40-year-old looking at the role of Prospero. You know, let's just take Arthur Miller quickly, because I directed and wrote about, when I was a professor, I wrote about why he killed all three protagonists in Death of a Salesman, View from the Bridge, and All My Sons. I was in my 30s and early 40s when I directed those plays. So when I directed Death of a Salesman, and I was like 34 years old, 35 years old, I looked at those characters. I saw the play through Biff and Happy's eyes, Willie's sons, not through Willie's eyes, because that was my life experience. Thought about my father. Well, a few years ago, I played Willie Loman for Thunder River, and I was now Willie's age, and I wasn't looking at it through the eyes of Biff and Happy. I was looking at it through the eyes of myself at that age, through Willie's eyes. Same thing with All My Sons. I redirected it a couple of years ago, and hopefully in the next year or two, I'd like to do View from the Bridge. Same thing. I would bring a different frame of reference, different life experience to the work. And that's what's important. I don't just get up and stage a play the way it says in the script. I work with actors so that they understand their intentions. What do they want? How do they get it? And I don't block a play. I let them discover what it is that they need. And then the blocking and the shape of the play sort of falls into its own world. And then when I know everybody's got it, then I can make it theatrical and make sure that people can see from every, you know, right, the sight lines and all those other things.
That's really interesting. Well, you made a brief mention of an important facet of opening night, and that is the renaming of the theater in your honor.
Wow.
And that's really something.
It is. It's
that is such stuff as dreams are made of.
That's right. That's right. I think of that every night when Prospero says those lines. It's amazing, and I'm honored. And I'm so proud of it. I'm so committed to our community. I mean, I've been living in the Valley for 40 years, even though I left for a little while to Villanova, but I kept my place here, thank God. I'm committed to Carbondale. I mean, school board, SCI board, BOCES, the Board of Cooperative Educational Services, Arts Council board for 12 years, eight as the president when Thomas was still here. And that, so to have, for me to have been able to raise the money and build this theater and leave that as a legacy for our community. I don't ever want it to be dentist offices. I want it to always be doing theater. Mm-hmm. And in today's technological world, if we don't hang on to that live theater, we're going to lose a huge piece of our soul. And so the performing arts are important to me. I'm honored that the board wanted to rename the theater as I stepped back from the leadership role, even though I'm still on the board. I stepped back from that leadership role, giving, to another generation to move forward with a new vision, maybe, honoring the historical precedent of the kind of work that people are used to seeing at Thunder River. So it is. It makes me really, really proud. So many people are responsible for Thunder River being where it's at today. It's not just me, but I love the idea of that black box being called the Lon Winston
Theater.
I'll bet.
I would say it's a fitting legacy. I mean, you created something where nothing existed.
Yeah, it was a mud hole over there. Now
it's an amazing thing, yeah, dude. I mean, yeah. And over and above just the building, the idea, everything associated with it. You had to build an audience to come to your
production. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, for the first, 10 years, 11 years, Thunder River traveled up and down the valley in an 18-wheeler and unloaded all our chairs and platforms wherever we could get a space to perform. And people are going, whoa, this is good stuff. And pretty soon you build that audience and, it's like the Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. And we have that audience.
What an amazing thing. And The Tempest starting this weekend, running
Friday.
Through.
It opens Friday night, preview Thursday, but it opens Friday. We're totally sold out for opening. I have friends from all over coming in for it because of the dedication and everything.
Sure.
And Saturday and then the following Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the following Thursday through Sunday, through Saturday. We have two high school matinees that we're doing, totally sold out. I'm so committed to education in the Valley, and so I'm thrilled that we're doing that, and they get to experience the play, and it's going to be way different than what they read in the script in their classes, and they're going to go, wow. I hope, that's the plan.
Must be fun to watch those kids' eyes light up.
Like, yeah, I think so. I think you, when we get kids over to the theater to watch our productions and talk about them afterwards with them, Death of a Salesman, I mean, just lots of different work that we've presented and then sit and talk with them afterwards. They're incredible what they see and experience, and from their frame of reference and point of view. I learn something more about the plays sometimes through those younger people. And we've got to get them into the theater, because if we don't get those young people into the theater and put those phones down and really digest and assimilate live performance, it's going to go the way of other things.
Yeah. Hey, Lon Winston, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.